Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by New Breed Training. New Breed exists to provide you with courses, cohorts, and resources from the New Breed team, such as yours truly, Andrea Jones, Ralph Moore, Alan Hirsch, Hugh Halter, and many more. To learn to disciple like Jesus so you can plant like Paul, head on over to newbreedtraining.com. And now, back to the Church Planner Podcast.
Well, welcome to the Church Planner Podcast. I'm really excited about our guest today. Obviously, this is not Peyton Jones. I don't have the lovely bald head. This is Chesley Lunday. I'm one of the team members. But we got my new friend, Russ Ewell. I said that last name right, correct? Awesome. Awesome. See, I watch enough TV to know. He's been on Fox News. He's been on other publications, and he is an expert when it comes to talking about generational engagement and Gen Z and where we're headed in the church. And he's also an executive minister at Bay Area Christian Church in, I'm guessing it's the Bay Area in California, right?
That's it, right there.
Golden State Warriors, unfortunately, they didn't do so hot this year.
You had to take me down, boy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, and they're not doing so hot either. So what can I say? All right. So, Russ, tell me, how did you even get into this line of thinking, this thought leadership space? I would love to know, what's your heart for Gen Z, and why are you so passionate about it?
Well, I think one of the things is that, you mentioned basketball, and I played that in high school, and so I love basketball. And I love football, but I didn't play because I played in Little League, and I got hit, and I went, I need to find another sport. So what I'm trying to get to is that team sports have been my thing. When I was, we have a basketball league that we're connected with in our church in the Bay Area. It's been going on for, 25 years. And I played in it for a long time. And then one year I had hurt my ankle and I decided to coach. And we had a number of teenagers at the time who were not sure what they thought about God, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said, well, maybe what I'll do this summer is I'll coach the teen team. And so we had one practice and I was like, we're going to just lose every game. I mean, this is not good. And so what happened is I said, okay. And I grew up in Michigan and I grew up with coaches that were very disciplined, and you did not go out and try to shine yourself, which put me on the bench a few times, by the way, because I was trying to shine myself. Then I found myself at coaching them the way my coach coached me, that it's about the team, et cetera. Well, make a long story short, we ended up going undefeated in an adult league and we won the championship. And at that moment, I looked and I went, oh, I haven't really grasped this, that my impact can be greater when I make other people great as opposed to me. And in particular, the younger people are much more capable than they even know they are. And so from that point on, I began to look and say, my goal as a minister in our church is to lose my job and to give it away, to make sure that each generation after me feels like they can take it. And one of the reasons I work a lot in digital is because I decided I need to make sure I'm doing something that keeps me out of the way when people that are younger come up. And so the average age of our staff is 30, and I'm, considerably older than them. But the key was that I looked and I said, that's the generation that, if you look at marketing and business, who do the advertisers go for? Who has the most disposable income? Who has the most disposable time? And most importantly, who influences our culture the most? And so once I landed in that space, I landed in the, I need to change my leadership training that I received and become a different kind of leader, which is making other people more effective. And then I also need to make sure that I understand this world is going to be more influenced by that age group. And as that age group changes, so back then it was millennials, then Gen Z. But as that age group changes, we also need to move to that next age group to try to figure out how to relate to them and to minister to them. So that's how I came to it in at least one aspect of it.
One, you showed a lot of humility there. But I can only guess you're probably a baby boomer. Is my guess.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the last year of the baby boomers, or if you look at other generational studies, I'm the first year of Generation X.
Gen X.
Yeah.
All right. So right there with, well, I guess Michael Jordan was 63. Yeah. My parents are 65, 66. So right in that age.
Yeah. Range. I'm right there with Michael Jordan.
There you go.
Same kind of basketball player too. Just wanted to make sure that we knew that.
Yes. Absolutely. the really interesting part of your story is most leaders are hitting their prime in church world in their mid 40s, 50s, and then all the way to 60. And you are already making the steps in your 50s to go, hey, we need to make sure that the younger generation is leading. And that is not a quality of most people over the age of 50. So what made you move that direction?
So, you know, it's interesting because around that time I wrote a book and or began writing a book, which I now have published. He's Not Who You Think He Is. But in the book, I talk about in 1993. So that will put the date on it. I moved to the Bay Area and began leading the church here. And what I did is I ended up going to a Stanford executive education, taking a Stanford executive education course with executives of different companies in Silicon Valley. I live in basically Silicon Valley part of the Bay Area and have been there from before everything boomed. And when I went into it, I was exposed to one of the foremost business thinkers, Jim Collins, and he actually released his first book at this event. I was standing in line with him at getting lunch, and you know, I was nervous, and I was like, I gotta ask a question. So I told him about, you know, how I had been trained and what I had seen in leadership and what I had been sort of directed to do. And one of the concepts he talked about was being a clock builder or a time teller. And at that moment, he said, it sounds like you're in a time teller organization. To make that concept really quick, plain, a time teller is someone who in the entire organization, he's the only one who tells the time. So people want to know what time it is. He goes, here's what time it is. A clock builder builds a clock so that everybody in the organization can tell the time. And so at that moment, I went, oh, and he told me this when I described the organizations I had been a part of. He said, you've been in a clock builder organization. And you've been in a time teller organization where one guy tells the time, and you're going to have to become a clock builder organization where what you build is more important than who you are and the role you play. And so I think that was the moment when it began to crystallize to me. And then being in Silicon Valley was really awesome because the startup culture, and I actually launched a startup years ago, a startup culture is really about younger people. I mean, software engineering in the prime is, you could argue, is in the 20s and the 30s, you know. And so you around here, you really learn, one, that if you don't have young people involved in what you do, you won't, not only won't stay current, won't be relevant, you won't be effective. And so all of that came together to create sort of a mindset for me of creating a culture in our church that anyone who's older needs to look at the younger people and say, how do I make them great? And I'm not saying that we do that perfectly or I've done that perfectly. I have as much pride as anyone and desire for achievement as anyone. So it's a constant battle spiritually to say, let me get into that space, in that Philippians 2 space of valuing others more than myself. And because of that, I think we've been able to get a lot more younger people involved in our leadership for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So let's segue into, how do we get young people into leadership when there's a lot less of them wanting to jump into it?
Well, I think I'll look at myself when I came along and in leadership and training, and I was trained under a lot of different people. And fortunately, I wasn't just trained in churches because like I said, I was an agnostic and I didn't really believe. And even when I became a Christian at about age 19, after not being involved in anything, I was still not particularly into being a leader in the church, or I was like, okay, I want to be here to make sure I'm not in trouble for eternity. But other than that, let's, you know, I got things to do. And I wanted to go into business and then politics. And so I was not interested at all. That experience has made me look at younger people and say, well, how do you inspire them? And sometimes I wasn't inspired because it was always about how do I conform to what other people want me to do? And never, what do you think about anything? And so one of the things I decided to do is go, okay, I'm going to make sure that people are involved in decision-making. I'm going to make sure that we trust them first, because when you trust people, they become trustworthy. And so I'm going to make sure we trust them. And again, I don't want to make it sound like we've done this perfectly in every instance or whatever, but we try to leave room for them to make mistakes and leave room for them to. So I'll give you a great example. We have music in our church, as everybody does, and well, at least most people do. And we were going to have a big conference. And so we have a concert at that conference each year. And I sat down with two guys for the first time who were pretty young at the time. I think they were just in their early 20s just in their early 20s. And I said, you guys are great musicians. I want you to decide what music we're going to listen to, and I want you to come up with the whole program. We'll go over it because I don't want you to go, too far out, but I'm basically saying to you, come up with it and I'll back you up. And even if people don't like that you chose that, I'll still back you up as long as it is, you know, within the realm of morally right and good and wholesome to a degree. And so Lady Gaga was one of the first things they wanted to use at the evening concert. And they said, hey, this is, and they had balls and balloons and lights and fog machines and this kind of thing. And we had people who were like, what is going on? And it was the moment, and it was an awesome night. Once it all got done, it was an awesome night. And it was, every song chosen was spiritual, but it wasn't necessarily from the, you know, the Christian selection that a lot of people listen to. And that night, it blew things open because we as a church had never done anything like that. We're very conservative in that regard. And so that involved trusting people before they had proven anything, before they had some established reputation. And it also displaced some people who usually were the ones in charge. And so those people who were older had to go, okay, I'm going to submit to what these guys are doing. And that was a moment, a turning point moment for our church where, and I got to say, the Berea Christian Church, one of the things that's great about our people that are older is they love the success of our younger people. So every year, and we're getting close to it, there's an amphitheater, a pretty big amphitheater here. It's a landmark in the Bay Area. We have an outdoor service there for the whole church comes together. Normally we meet in our eight different campuses, but the whole church comes together. And people look forward to the selection of what we call our scholars and our interns. Scholars are people that we give money to while they're in school to help them in school to become a future leader. It doesn't matter if they become a future leader in our church, a future leader in an industry. Some become teachers. Some become engineers. Some do go into the ministry. And so we present them every year, and it's usually between 20 and 40 younger people. They're still in college or they're just getting out of college, and they may do it for 4 years. They may do it for 6 years, or they may decide they want to do it with their life. So our church loves that. And our older people, we had a video of them that we put together. We put together a lot of video. And I've seen you talk about that a lot, you know, that using the digital assets and tools. And you talk, so you don't know what I'm talking about on this. So we put one together, and it was an interview with all of our younger leadership. And it was during a special time of giving in our church. And each one of them came on and said why they became a scholar, why they became an intern, why they wanted to be a leader in the church at a young age and have that experience. And people in the parts of our church where older people live, I got messages on our group text saying people were crying watching the video. And I was like, why were they crying? What happened? And then some people who were older said they were crying because they knew some of these kids when they were born as babies. And so that's the culture that God has created in our church. And to me, you know how John 15 talks about God as a gardener. I don't feel like it's been like me coming up with stuff. I feel like God has been nurturing and gardening our church and using people that are younger to influence it and using great-hearted people that are older in our church who've been very successful in their professional lives to say, I'm willing to step back to let you be greater. So that's, I hope that's not too long winded, but that's what's been going on.
No, that's really good stuff. I appreciate that, because I think most of the time we in church world, we're beginning to have, we used to have the worship wars. Now we have the model wars. It's like, which model is better than the other? Yeah. And what you're saying, hey, is if the eye's on the prize and in the mission, it really changes people, and that's the point. And so I really appreciate the story, and I think there's some nuggets of wisdom for any church planter out there, any church leader listening to this that is going, how do we get young people involved? Well, you didn't just get young people involved. I bet you got a lot of older people that started giving. You know, so it was all the way around.
100%. Yeah. And one of the things I'm going to put sort of, this is going to come to you as sort of a question for you, but one of the things that also changed me. So I'll try to put this in a concise way. So I lived in D.C. for a while, and I had a number of friends that were in the military there. It was probably the greatest education I ever had in how the military works. I had family members I alluded to off before our podcast that were in it, but I never understood it. And so one of the guys was a captain in the Navy. He may have been a lieutenant commander at the time. And he said he worked in the Pentagon. And so he said, hey, I want to take you for a tour in the Pentagon. I'll take you through it. And I was like, I've never even been in a place like that. And so we walked through. He didn't just show me things. He was explaining to me the culture. And so he said, you know, I got all these degrees and that's how I got my rank. And he said, but see that guy over there, he's ranked lower than me, but that medal right there says he was actually in battle. He's more respected than me. Like, I may have a rank, but if someone sees that, and so he was explaining the culture. And then he talked about how they develop leaders in the military. He actually ended up teaching at the war college or going to the war college. And so he told me all about that. And I didn't understand how the military develops leaders. And I've come to believe, and I'm not advocating that anybody agree with me on this, but I've come to believe that one of the organizations you have to look at a lot for developing leadership is the military, because what he told me, and I didn't go confirm this in any book, and it was off the record, I suppose, is he goes, basically, it's up and out here. You know, you either get promoted up, or as you get older, you know, you're going to go out. You don't just get static. And so one of the things we decided and understood about it, learning from it, is you have to keep developing young people. And that's why the military has continued to put out not just great leaders in the military, but great leaders that leave the military and then come into the workforce or come into the political arena. And so I would be remiss if I didn't point out that was one of the things that informed our decision as well. We have some guys here who grew up in the military as kids, and they were like, hey, you know, this is what we saw growing up. And you get one of our elders is a former military. His dad was a Marine and all that. He said, you know, I was used to like 18, 19 year old guys being leaders. And he goes, I don't understand why in our church an 18, 19 year old guy can't be a leader. And so we made a goal on all of our campuses that over the next, we've not put a hard number of it, but over the next 3 to 4 years, we're going to have at least half of our campuses led by millennials. And we now have just begun to move into a position where we'll have our first generation Z person in charge of a campus. And so we're pushing hard for that. And some of us who are older stay around, but the reason we stay around is more to be a knowledge base than anything. So they have some reference, because if you're 23 years old and you haven't led a lot before, you just may not have never seen something like that. Totally. But I just wanted to mention that and I sort of ask you to reflect when you look at people in the ministry like me and you sort of evaluating it or understanding how they operate, there's from all your vast experience at different levels, church, military, business, you have to have some thoughts about our development process and how it could be made better. And I was curious when I was going over what you've done to say, I'm going to ask him because I don't mind finding out what I do wrong. And I even more importantly want to figure out how do we do it better, because I can point out a lot of things we aren't being effective enough at in developing our leaders. So maybe you could say a few things about what I just put out there.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And you just had me, you know, work through my PTSD. I was stationed out in Aberdeen Proving Grounds right outside of D.C. So,
wow.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, the thing that I think about most is Jesus gave his authority to a band of 12 dudes. And obviously he had other followers there.
Yeah.
On the heels of their biggest failure. Like, if you think about it, like, Peter, you know, a month and a half earlier had literally denied even knowing Jesus. And now Jesus is like, all right, I'm out of here. You guys got it from here. You know?
Wow.
And I so, thought like that. Yeah. So what you're saying is true. I believe we don't move fast enough in letting young people lead. For whatever reason, I think this is American culture because we built this scholarly evaluation of whether people are ready. Yeah. What business is finding out is that's not helpful anymore because that doesn't mean you're a leader.
Yeah.
And the church, specifically the church, they are like, hey, you're not mature enough to lead people in their 80s until you're 40 at least. And right. Gen Z is just not going to play that game. They're also not going to argue. They're just going to leave or not come at all. Right. Exactly. And so the church has built a system. Our entire nation is built of institutions that have worked until the digital age.
Yeah.
And now they're all hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you need new leaders with new paradigms that understand decentralization and digital technology. And it's not just the technology, it's the decentralization behind it. And we're not natives to that. I'm not even a native to that. Like, yeah. I got out of school without having to take a typing class. It was always the year behind me. You know, so I'm a millennial. I'm definitely a bridge generation between the pre-digital age and the digital age, which is why I can talk to both very well. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just think that you need what you said. You need older people. Arthur Brooks wrote this book called From Strength to Strength.
Yeah.
And he talks about the difference between fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. Fluid intelligence is when you're in your 20s and 30s, you're innovative, you're creative, you think of new things, but it wanes over time. Like Michael Jordan would not be on a basketball team if he tried out today. Why? Because it's like fluid intelligence. Michael in basketball hit his crystallized and his fluid in his 30s, you know, and then it started waning from there.
Yeah.
And most leaders hang on too long and they don't have the fluid intelligence, but what they do have is crystallized intelligence. So they can get referenced for, I've seen this, I've experienced this. Here's the things that you need to think about. And I'm not here to tell you what to create. I'm just here to tell you how to navigate when you create it. And so I think what you're saying is spot on.
Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning, but Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out Reliant.org/CPP.
Well, what you're talking about is challenging, and I'll just, you know, reveal some of what I have experienced. First, technology came to me quick because I have two kids with special needs. And so when they were born, it was complicated because there's a lot I didn't understand. My wife understood a lot more. She has a background in education, so she understood a lot more. But as we were taking care of them, I was like, I now have a more complicated life and I've got to be more efficient. And technology was what I grabbed a hold of. And so I was early on to get a laptop I was early on to use software. I wrecked more hard drives trying to install more software. But I had friends who happened to be software engineers, and I'd call them at work during the day and go, "I've just messed this up. Walk me through it." And they'd take a break at work and be on the phone with me. So I began doing that in the late 80s, in the early 90s. And so technology I saw as a friend, what was then the cell phone, not the smartphone, I saw as a friend. Now, why do I bring that up? Because you write about this, about the importance of innovation and creativity. And I have Arthur Brooks' book. It's on my list. I haven't started it yet. So now you maybe made me jump it. I bought it right when it came out. But I'm in the middle of a bunch of books on, you know, Jonathan Haidt's Anxious Generation. And,
oh yeah, I'm reading that right now too.
And the mental health challenge. Good. I'm in the middle of that, and I try to keep my history books going too. We could get into it. Ulysses S. Grant is like my guy. So I've got like 14 books on Ulysses S. Grant.
All right,
that's my guy right there. But as I was going through the technology experience, we did everything from developing an education lab in our church that now has become a using of technology in a company I built that does communication software for iPads that allow people who have speaking challenges to be able to communicate. The reason I mention that is we have a practice here that helps us bring young people in quicker. It's bivocational ministry. We don't do it for financial reasons. We can afford to pay them. We do it because what we believe is a lot of times people are unrelatable when they don't have the on the ground experience going to a job, dealing with people who aren't in church. Sometimes in church, we can have a culture that is not relatable to someone outside of it. One of the big passages we talk about here a lot is 1 Corinthians 9. Becoming all things to all men. To me, that's a chapter about innovation. And I'm holding on to what you said, by the way, about the Jesus handing things over to that young crowd that had just on their biggest failure. I needed that. I needed that to keep my faith going, because sometimes I see some things and I'm like, oh, no. And you know what it is? My pride is on the line. So I want us to be successful. And I think that's what happens to us as ministers. As you get older, your esteem can become connected to certain things. And I look at athletes and how they let go. And I look at athletes who don't let go. And I look at athletes and I'm going, I hope you're going to go. You need to go now. And I love watching you, but if you play one more year, this could get ugly. And I look at that from my own life. So what we do is bivocational ministry, where people will have a job that they work in addition to their ministry job. Some people might do a Tuesday, Thursday bivocational job. Some may do a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Some might do just a Friday. They might be in physical therapy. They might be software engineers. They might be teachers that also work with us. And so what I found is that integrates them into both the world around them, so they understand it. Because our big deal is we have two main focuses of the Bay Area Christian Church: making God known and doing good. And so our feeling is the doing good is our engagement with the community. And we have a philosophy that regardless of whether someone goes to our church or not, we want to do good for them. And so part of being in the working world, and so I've been doing that for a long, long time. I've worked in technology. I've been part of a lot of different initiatives. One was Hacking Autism because of my kids, where we work with HP and some other companies to be able to advocate for the development of software on iPads and computers to help kids with special needs. But all that kept me involved in a world that wasn't centered around just church, which made me then more relatable in my communication. And I'll add this too, more aware that in companies, they don't have these cultures where they try to say, if you're young, stay down. If they see a brilliant person, they're like, get that guy up here as quick as possible. Because that's when we got to sell products. You know,
right.
Paycheck. And so we've tried to bring that in, and it's been successful. And we used to do it a little bit. Now everyone on staff is going to have to be bivocational. And that means even some of our older staff are having to realize, oh, I've got to make a contribution in some area other than ministry. I can't just do that only every day. Mm-hmm.
I love that. I you know, it is going to be something that I think more churches need to move towards anyway. But I think you know, I've been trying to, for myself, I've always loved business. I remember at 21 years old, crying in my dad's vehicle, feeling like I had to make a decision between ministry or business. And now I'm like, I don't, and I probably shouldn't. It probably would be way more helpful for the body of Christ and for people to meet Jesus if I actually figure out a way where both can work.
Yes.
Right. And so, and the fact that, let's be honest, there's a lot of seminary trained guys that never had a full-time job a day in their life, never picked up a hammer, never actually had to say yes, sir, to a boss, never had to learn how to, you know, lead a team that you're not paying, you know, and it's hard, it's difficult. And when you don't have those life experiences, you are just not that good of a leader.
Oh, 100%. When we were working on a lot of the technology projects, because of the way God works, I ended up in a meeting, at one of the companies here, one of the biggest ones, to make a presentation of my software and some of the work we were doing. And these two guys were the head of a department that, if I'm not going to mention it, but that were head of the department that everybody would know, oh, you were with these two guys. But when I walked in there, I felt so small, Chesley. I felt like I was so nervous. And I wouldn't say I usually get nervous in situations meeting people, because I realized who I was, that I was just another person. These guys are influencing the whole world by the decisions they make. And what really impacted me was one of the guys said, hey, I've got to leave our meeting for a minute. I think it was Samsung is in the building and they're upset about some stuff and we've got to go work that out. And I'm going to try and come back. I go, I don't mind. I'm just appreciate you. He goes, no. This is really important to us. These guys were both at least 10 years younger than me. And they were brilliant. And in that moment, I realized, oh, I have a role in the world, but I'm not the center of the world. The important part about bivocational and getting out of the quote unquote office, which I'm very rarely in myself, is that you need to see the way the world views you and understand how you can take what you have and contribute. And that's what produces the humility we need for God, I think, to lift us up, is the humility to say, no, we're not the center of the universe. No, the Generation Z and millennial kids and adults, they're not looking and going, oh my gosh, I really need to know what Pastor so-and-so has to say. Boy, my life won't work without church. They're reading Brené Brown and they're going, I think she knows more than you know. And if you don't know about her, then I what's your problem? Or like you referenced, they're reading Arthur Brooks, or they're reading many of the young authors that are now producing some of the great content and podcasters as well that are in every arena. And so I try to stay abreast of those things. But what keeps my wife and I young is we have young people throughout not only our ministry, but in our home. They come over, they're around our kids and us, and I just learn about music. I mean, I don't know that I would have gone out and gotten any Taylor Swift if it wasn't for some of the young ladies who are friends with my daughter. And I felt real good about myself because I was watching Bruce Springsteen on a reel, and he said, I picked up my daughter from the airport, and she said, Taylor Swift's come out with a banging album. You got to listen to it, you know? And I went, everybody who I think stays relevant and aware that's older has a deep connection with the world around them and people that are young.
Yes, absolutely. I have teenagers and young adults, college age kids in my house every Sunday. And, you know, we're having a conversation. I'm 37, right? Yeah. But I made a joke because I couldn't say something. I said, Hooked on Phonics works for me, guys. None of them got the joke. And I'm like, it was the first time I have sat in a room and went, oh, I'm old.
Oh. Trust me, Chesley, the future is bright with many experiences like that.
I'm sure of that.
In all of our campuses, like I said, we have 8. I used to speak at the one that would had all different ages, but it was the biggest one, but we split it. And I went with the younger group. And so I'm twice the age, or more than twice the age, of everyone I speak to. So I'll get into these stories, and this is going to date me in a way that you'll laugh. I mean, you'll be aware, I think, but I get into these stories and I go, I was telling the story about watching the Brady Bunch. Mm. And in that moment, I realized no one in this room knows what I'm talking about.
No one knows.
So I go into YouTube and I talk about YouTube, and then some of the kids go, oh yeah, I think I saw that on Nickelodeon. Yep. when I was like seven.
Yeah. And
in that moment, I realized everything I referenced. Sometimes, you know, you talk about things and you don't realize you're going to say it. Everything I reference, I now have to go, do I need to explain what this is? And so it's a hilarious thing. And I've become much more familiar with J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar and all of them, because Drake, because these kids and others that I don't even really know who they are. And when Juice WRLD died, you know, that was a moment of mourning for a lot of the people. And I was like, OK, I got to go hear this guy, figure out who this guy is and what happened, you know. And so I think that that helps you as a leader in any field to be able to know, oh, I my generation is not the center of the world anymore. And or it's soon not to be. And I think that's important. And I think that's you said something earlier, I think it's really we should be really aware of. And that is that whether it's in politics or whatever, we have a culture with regard to organizations that is going to change whether we like it or not. And not all those changes will be for the better. Some of the observation we make, go, that's not the way to go. Well, it's the same way when your generation came up and when my generation came up. My parents looked at us and were like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with these people? You know, they were Korean War people. They were like, my grandmother grew up in the Depression. And she's like, you don't have enough? You need more shoes? You know, like, shoot, you don't need that. I didn't, you know, and you hear about them walking the 80 miles through the war. And
yeah, uphills both ways without shoes in the snow.
Yeah. Hunting for their own food, you know.
Totally.
And so,
I'm like, you guys had locomotives back then.
Yeah. And my dad's like, there's no greater player than Bill Russell. I don't want to hear about it. You know, he's the greatest of all. No, Michael Jordan, not Magic Johnson. No, you're wrong. Well,
I live in Akron, Ohio. Everybody worships LeBron here. And I'm like, nope, I've seen both of them play. Nope.
Man, I'm surprised they haven't burned your house down.
Oh, I'm telling you, he's the second best player that's ever played the game.
Oh, wow! And see, I'm not even ready to go there for sure because I'm a Magic and Larry guy. I watch Magic and Larry.
I love those two guys too. But
yeah. We have that conversation. I've got guys who insist that Kobe Bryant is better than all of them. You know, and why isn't Kobe number one? I'm like, Kobe?
Kobe? He's not even the top 12.
And you would have thought, you know, I had assaulted them or something with that statement. Right. What I love about what you're saying and what you're doing, and I think it's important, is, this is how I take it. You're challenging the thinking of people around, plus and minus 10 years of my age. And even to say you can't hang on forever. I think sometimes people, and I've had this here, sometimes people think that means we want to push you aside or push someone aside. And that's not really what it is. And so what I started to look at a lot is I love basketball, as I alluded to. I watch coaches and I watch these coaches that are sometimes 50, 60, 70. And, you know, usually around 70, they're about to be done. Saban just retired, but they love coaching. But coaching is very different than being in charge. Like when they go on the field, they're not in charge, which is why some of the coaches get so mad because the player. But I try to look at leading as coaching, and some people don't. I will add this. Some people don't take coaching well. And so one of the things we do, I should say for those out there who are going, yeah, well, I just throw all my young people in there. Well, I think there's training and there's trust. And I talked about trust earlier, but I think people have to be willing to be trained. And me personally, biblically, if they don't have their faith on straight, well, that's going to be a problem. And so we have to make sure they have their faith on straight. That to me is the key. It's not their opinions. It's not their perspective. It's not, like you said, what model of church leadership do they want to have? Is do they have the Bible on straight? And are they a believer? And are they committed to the Bible and to the relationship with God? Do they have a view that I want to be like Jesus, manifested in my own personality and uniqueness? But do I want to be like Jesus? Do they have that on straight? And that's the training that we focus on a lot. We don't focus on training people to speak like we speak or to you know, have the opinions we have. And we have a lot of debates about a lot of things. And to me, they're fun because I'm shocked sometimes by what they think and they're shocked by what I think. And it ends up usually in laughter, you know, and we realize that, you know, what I love is our digital team are all younger than you. And so, and obviously way younger than me, but they have views on things that are just radically, I'm nervous doing some stuff and they're like, yeah. What are you talking about? It doesn't even matter. And sometimes they're wrong. Sometimes they're really
sometimes
wrong.
Sometimes they are wrong.
Yeah. But a lot of times I'm wrong and I'm just too afraid or I'm unfamiliar. And so I think that what I would encourage people to do is it's not about pushing you aside. It's about recruiting new team members onto your team and allowing them to make you different. UConn won the national championship in basketball this year in Michigan, which is my team. They won the national championship in football. And I could go on about that for a long time. But what is unique about both those teams is Jim Harbaugh changed his whole approach to coaching because he recognized the uniqueness of this generation. And the UConn coach has a very, I'd call it interactive relationship with his players. Even watching the Super Bowl when Travis Kelce, I think it was, went up and yelled at Andy.
Yeah, Reed. With Andy Reid. Yes. I thought that was a great moment, great teaching moment.
Oh, I think Andy Reid's handling of that was
spot on.
Oh, and you know, the challenge I face all the time is the spiritual challenges of leadership are pride, selfish ambition, and that gets in the way when you're trying to develop young leaders. Because our flesh, our body, our instincts is we want to be right and we want to be in control. My wife said to me 2 weeks ago, because I'm trying to work on the chronic levels of stress I carry. That's a whole nother discussion. Trying to improve those workouts, by the way.
Yeah, we should definitely have another interview after this.
But she said, look, I think the issue you've got is you feel like you can control outcomes. And you have to realize that as you turn over leadership, you cannot control the outcome. And you're going to have to be okay with the outcome turning out, whether it's good or bad, in a way that you didn't want or you didn't expect. I don't like seeing people hurt. I don't like seeing people disappointed. I don't like seeing people that I've known for a long time not be included in what they may want to do. But as young leaders take over, they may select other people. They may choose other things. And that to me is probably pride, selfish ambition, and the desire to control the outcomes. Oh man, let me tell you, that's what it means. You don't have to like get kicked out of leading, but you have to give up those two things, pride and selfish ambition, and you have to give up control. And that's the challenge. And that's my goal right there. I'm not there, but a friend of mine who ran a counseling department in one of the colleges, he told me, Russ, awareness is health. When it comes to mental health, awareness is health. So just knowing I've got to deal with that allows me to second guess myself and go, is this because I'm trying to accomplish something that needs to be accomplished for God? Or is this because of my pride, my selfish ambition, or my desire for controlling the outcome?
That we just went to a masterclass on leadership right there. So I learned new things today. So good. Let's talk about Gen Z and some of the practical things you guys are doing as you see the environment that they're in. Obviously, you're in Silicon Valley. It's not even post-Christian. I mean, I was in Portland the other last week. Like, it is pre-Christian. Like, they don't have a framework anymore. Yeah. Like, my generation did. Gen Z doesn't.
Yeah.
And we're in a, and then we add digital on top of that. Like, what are you guys doing? What are you seeing? How are you reaching them? What does that look like?
So that goes back to the, you know, and we're really trying to get this in our culture. Bay Area Christian Church is about making God known and doing good. And we've worked hard. I've had to work hard personally, shedding tradition, shedding instincts and inclinations to be what I would call religious or to practice religiosity, and to replace that with spirituality. To me, Jesus was the most spiritual man to ever live. And that becoming spiritual is the goal. I was always told when I first became a Christian, you got to be like Jesus. But I began to explore, well, what does that really mean? And that means becoming a spiritual person. And what that tracks with, and you've revealed a little bit of this from your research. It seems like you got a lot more there that I would like to take a look at, but that they want spirituality and they don't see organized religion as spiritual, and many of them don't see organized religion as a solution to anything in their life. They don't necessarily see organized religion is going to make marriage or relationships and dating better. They don't see organized religion is going to help their mental health. They don't see organized religion is going to solve their loneliness problem. I'm not saying they're right. I'm simply saying that's how they see it. And one of the most important things to do is listen to people in these generations and hear what they're saying, instead of judge whether they're correct. Because if you don't hear what they're saying, you can't even begin a conversation. So that's one of the things we did. And by doing that, making God known, I think a lot of us as Christians know to whatever degree what that means, but the doing good. And so we have extraordinary levels of initiatives involved with special needs kids. I alluded to the fact that I have special needs kids, but we developed one of the programs we developed. I actually created it by the accidental inspiration of God telling me how to give my kids the sport experience I had young, even though they couldn't be part of the sports programs that I was part of growing up. And we created inclusive programs where typical kids or with special needs kids. The first time I did it, it was across the street from my house in a field of a middle school near me that we took my little kids, and they were like 5 and 7, something like that. And we took them out there to teach them how to play soccer with coaches that I found and recruited, and with students that were a little older than them to be their coaches. We had 8 of kids with special needs, about 8 kids without special needs that are typical. And then we had coaches, and then parents brought kids to be a part of it. And that's grown from 8 kids to now thousands of kids, both here in the Bay Area and around. We have a partnership with the San Jose Earthquakes. They've been extraordinary in holding clinics to be able to make it more available to and known for people all around the Bay Area. We've helped launch them in countries in Africa, in the Philippines, where people have taken it and built it. But what that does is it lets younger people and older people see we're about doing good and helping people. We've started programs for helping people do good who have addiction challenges. And they are able to go to their rehab experience. But what we do is make sure they have something to regain and gain a purpose for. And so a lot of what we do is that we have partnership with eHoops. We started eBasketball, which again is the inclusive program, and the Warriors have grabbed a hold of that. We've just started with Golden Buddies, which is Cal football team, where they have eFootball, and the Special Olympics is involved in that, and Cal. And so when we're doing all these things in the community, what it allows them to do is see us as people that are making the community around them better. And when people can see people make their life better, they start to go, well, maybe this is something that I should take a look at, or this is not what I thought Christianity was about. And we do not push at any of those events that you need to go to church, that you need to believe in God. We don't do that. We had an Easter egg hunt that was inclusive at all 8 of our campuses. Many of them had 2 Easter egg hunts, but they were inclusive Easter egg hunts where special needs kids could come and be a part of an Easter egg hunt that was sensory oriented for them and made it available. We ended up having come to that people from a Hindu background, people from Buddhist background that came out and said, I just wanted my kid to have an Easter egg hunt experience. I'm not Christian. I'm not involved. And we said, this doesn't have anything to do with that. We're just putting on an Easter egg hunt for the community. And so those things have allowed people to see we're about making the community better, regardless of whether you believe what we believe. And I think Generation Z is one of the most volunteer-oriented generations we've had in a long time. And they believe in the cause of making the world better. And we do it because we want to make the world better, too. And those kind of connections help you build a relationship with people that are in that generation. And when you build a relationship, you begin to know them. When you begin to know people, you understand what they need, and you understand how to make God known to them in different ways in your church.
That's so good. You had a word there, it's purpose. And we know Gen Z, that's probably their main driver is purpose. Even in some of the research that we did, we found, you know, they talked about, hey, one of the best ways to help me grow spiritually is through mental health training and then life development. So the two things that they said they wanted was help with isolation and anxiety, which they're very closely linked already. And then they wanted help with life planning. They felt like that was a spiritual exercise for them.
Wow.
So life planning was the number one choice.
Really? Which
blew us away. So it really resonates with your, you know, the concept that you've seen with purpose. Like, I would love for you to talk a little bit more about how churches can help Gen Z find purpose.
Well, okay. So I haven't done the kind of research you've done, but your research just confirmed something that we tried to do, but I didn't know it. I didn't understand what you just said.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm working with our main team on in developing leaders, and we literally had this conversation Sunday night. We have a little dinner and we sit together and just talk. And I said, look, when it comes to raising up young guys, I said, I think a lot of us think that it's like, okay, let me grab this guy and give him a bunch of jobs to do. And I go, that's not how you develop people. And I said, you have to understand that the people that, and I work with a lot of them when they were younger. And I said, you guys and the people we work with, I go, I got to help these guys figure out their class schedule. I go, they have my phone number and we're texting back and forth about dating and okay, how do I date her? What's going on? Or I might like this person. They have to have help figuring out a budget. Now, I won't sit down always with the budget, but I'll send them to our administrative team and let them sit down with them and go through and figure out a budget. And I said, it takes 5 years to develop someone and then to even find out if they're going to be any good at a ministry job. But so we had a guy who was in that plan and we helped him with everything. He's a brilliant guy. But he was in graduating college and we were like, maybe he can do ministry, maybe not. Again, we went with the bivocational thing. At the time, we put him on the digital team. He had never programmed before. And we said, well, we'll teach you how to program so that if you end up not being in the ministry, you have a fallback. Well, he ended up working with one of the top five tech companies in the world as a software engineer when he left. Because we went, you probably don't really like this. But it was an example of what you said, the life planning. He's now married. He just had his second kid. He's got a great family and he's still a leader in our church. But he just doesn't work for us full time, but it's like he is by his influence, but it was the planning of his life. And so I totally get that. And with my own kids, I see it, you know, I mean, that's a lot of what we do. We're constantly trying to plan. Okay. How do we move forward? How do we take that next step? You know, how do we get you, you know, to launch this next level and all that? And it's like, I tell the guys, it's like parenting. Raising up leaders is like parenting. So I'd love to hear even more about that.
Totally. Sorry. Not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, you're going to find with some of your kids you parent, they're better at you than stuff. And so adjusting to that is important and being able to become a fan and not always have to be the star of the show. But so here's the question I have in regard to what you've seen in your research is and maybe I'm wrong, but Pew says this, that they're interested in spiritual things. But my sense is we've made a judgment about this younger generation too quickly with regard to what they think about God. It's why I wrote that book, He's Not Who You Think He Is, because I think they have a view of God that I'll throw myself in there. We've given them that isn't necessarily an accurate view of God. And that part of what we have to do is introduce him to them for the first time. But maybe I'm wrong. I'd just like to understand what you think their thinking is about God and church, because I want to learn better how to communicate him accurately. And I know there's habits and beliefs and ways I have that aren't even accurate reflections of what God is like that can throw someone off.
Totally. Well, first off, they are very spiritual. They're very open. You know, Gen Z, you know, the research we did was 13 to 26 years old.
Wow.
You know, that's probably 14 to 27 now. because it came out last year. But yeah, they're very open. They have a concept of who God is. It doesn't necessarily mean Jesus, although they'd be open to him too. They want to see certain things. Like when they're thinking about God, they have some innate values that I think America just didn't have, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So when they're thinking about the goodness of God, they're thinking of it in terms of, well, is he inclusive? Is he non-judgmental? Is, you know, so those are some questions. Like if they're going to serve a God that they call inherently good and just,
yeah,
isn't God this? So their questions are going to look different than what they used to be. And the other thing we're finding is, and I've heard this other places, and I, in our research, it kind of bared it out a little bit. Men are becoming more conservative and religious, while women would consider themselves more spiritual and less religious. And it was significant enough. Like if you look at the cultural, like this is not me, this is me taking my research hat off and then taking my cultural anthropologist hat on and my like church planter hat on.
Yeah.
Like I think the abuse and the scandal that the church has gone through and that has been publicized has made more and more women skittish, which is interesting to me because I remember the conversation 10 years ago being it's 67% women and we can't get men to come to church.
Yeah.
And the reality is we're losing the women too now. And you know, and the brand of men that are that they're attaching to religion is actually a reaction to the culture, message that masculinity is toxic. And so when you attach that stuff, they're looking for a regiment, which is why people go in the military to help them and have context for their masculinity. And the culture's not doing that anymore. They're just saying it's bad. And so I think those are the two major things that I see at play with Gen Z, especially, you know, the differences between men and women.
Yeah.
And where it's headed there. So, yeah, I mean, they're very open, but the questions are different, though. The way they're thinking about it is very different.
Do you think? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you think that that means that we have to learn to think with regard to the differences, the different questions they have? We have to learn to think differently about how we communicate. Or if we have a struggle thinking differently, we have to learn to put people out there who can think that way and can answer those kind of questions. Is that what that means?
Totally. The majority of the American church, and I doesn't even matter the model, especially when, as it pertains to Gen Z and millennials, like we're answering questions that nobody's asking, which is why nobody even's thinking about the church as an answer. It's not that they're saying, I don't agree with the church, therefore I'm going to look at something else. The church never shows up in their frame of reference in their worldview to influence a behavior. Like this is not even remotely a part of their thought process. They don't go, well, what does the Bible say about that? Or how would God think? Or what would my pastor think? Or, you know, they're not thinking any of that. Like they're like, oh, I wonder if we'll talk about it at church. They're not going. Like, in fact, it's like when I look for the spiritual authority in my life, it's probably somebody on YouTube. It's probably Ed Milet, Tony Robbins, Oprah Winfrey. And those are the older versions. There's probably, you know, other people, you know, there's a couple of guys that I know in their 30s and they're very much a new age Buddhist representation of the divine. And so and most Christians don't even know how to handle that because they've not studied Buddhism a day in their life. So the questions are different, you know, and we're still answering old questions. So I think that's when I see what the church needs to change. Yeah, get somebody that's thinking about it. Have them communicate to them. Articulate it in a way that this generation can understand. I think, you know, as a pastor, I also realize that the pattern of communication that resonates with the over 40 crowd is different than the communication pattern and I'm talking about from a stage, then that resonates with a younger crowd. Like
younger
crowd wants experiential, story-based, very quick on their points. And they don't want to have multiple points. They'd like one. it's narrative. And then, an older, eight, 40 and above, like they grew up with didactic reasoning and logical formation of communication. So, the 3 points in a poem makes a lot of sense to them. That's not the way it works. It's actually almost flipped what I would call a digital generation, which is anybody under the age of 40.
Well, it's interesting what you're saying. You said a lot. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this because I'd be taking notes if we weren't just
Russ, you're making me talk too much.
This is the beauty of it. I try to come with questions every day because as you get older, the easiest thing to do is to settle into what you know, and it's comfortable. And it's why there's a tendency to surround ourselves with people that are just like us and our same experience because it's comfortable. And to stay curious, I think I think that determines a lot about how long you can sustain being in leadership. Are you still curious about what you don't know? And so you said some things that, so when I started putting our digital team together, most of those guys were in their 20s. Some are entering their 30s and some are still in their 20s. And some are actually barely in their 20s, but the men and women group, our team has men and women. And when you alluded to the women comments you made, my wife leads the women is a primary woman leader in our church, and she's very dynamic and better than me at a number of things that I'm talking about publicly, and she's skilled, and we have a philosophy that the women need to be a part of creating the culture. And so when we bought our second building, the judgment was made that the first building was too over influenced by men. And so it was cold and clinical. And so the second one was the women influenced it. And it isn't about being a homemaker. It's about having an awareness of what people feel and think when they walk into an environment. What are they experiencing? And so the favorite place to go is the new one. Or the newer one, it's not necessarily nicer. It's just more warm.
Warm.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we have the men in our church have learned your wife may be more talented than you in certain areas. She may shine more. And there are, depending on the couple, where people will be like, I'll give you an example. I was teaching at a big retreat and my wife and I taught together. And, afterwards, some of the guys I'd known for years walked up and said, "Oh boy, that class was so great, man! I got so much out of what Gail said. It was so they were quoting her, and I was like, well, did I do all right? I mean, they didn't even mention my part of the class, and so I think when women don't see women being able to influence it, and then they see other negative things happening, you're just compounding it. So I love hearing about how we can even do better and why that's an important place to go. But the other thing that's happened to me is the young guys in the digital team said, you're covering a lot of information. And I love to consume information and I love to put information out. And they said, it's too much information. And I can see the kids with ADHD, after 25 seconds, if you don't tell a story, a joke, or if you don't do something they can interact with, they're gone. They left. And I still will do more points than I probably should, but I've really changed how I speak because of who I'm speaking to. So I want to support what you're saying with your research with real on the ground experiences. And that's what I do. I studied religion. I didn't do seminary. I studied religion academically. And so when you say Buddhism and Hinduism, I felt like, hey, I got to understand what's going on. And when you start to understand, the millions of gods in Hinduism and what the cultures are around that, then you start to see through that lens a little bit better. And you also maintain a level of humility about, I understand why people are more attracted to Buddhism. I personally didn't choose that, but they sense it's more spiritual. I think Christianity is the most spiritual religion on earth, but it's not always communicated as being spiritual. And I just finished writing we have a site called Deep Spirituality that I created on my own and launched it years ago. And I just published the Blueprint for Spiritual Living, because I believe that Christians and people who are seeking God need to know this Jesus we're talking about. This is spirituality, the way he interacts with God and people, the way he carries himself, the way he communicates, the way he sees the world, the way he uses what's around him as a way to explain who God is. And it's not complicated. It's simple. And sometimes I think as people who speak, we want to be smarter. We want to appear smarter. The generations that are older want us to intellectualize. And I feel comfortable doing that. But the key is, are you reaching people, not are you being able to prove your level of intelligence? And I think that the new generation is coming. They're gonna vote with their, did you keep my attention? Did you relate to what I'm having to deal with? And are you interesting to listen to? Because I can watch a guy on YouTube at home who's funnier and who helped me figure out how to get a date.
Yep, totally. You're not wrong. And I, as you're talking, I was thinking about, some of the stuff that I've worked through with leaders as well. I have one story. I started like falling into this with a foreign exchange student and a retired pastor, ended up not saying one scripture verse in my Christmas sermon. I did the meta narrative of scripture, but I didn't quote a scripture verse, and I did a lot of art stuff. The foreign exchange student became a Christian that day, and the retired pastor left my church because I didn't use a Bible verse. And I'm like, oh man, we have some issues. So, and I was a much poorer communicator than I was now, but there's a book that I think you would absolutely enjoy. It is, it's not a book. It's Marshall McLuhan. It's a collection of his writings, and it's about spirituality in the digital age. So, but Marshall McLuhan died in 1989.
Yeah, I have a couple of his books, but what's this one?
Media is the Message is his probably best known.
Yeah, I've got that.
As soon as we get it off of here, I will go right downstairs and I'll go grab it, because it's phenomenal. He's talking in the 60s. About what we are actually dealing with today. And everybody thought he was nuts. So, but I'm like, he's talking about young generations being so inundated with information that they have to experience something because they process the world body first, not mind first.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, he calls it the holistic man. And that's what we're dealing with. I can talk to Gen Z and millennials that are, my age and younger, because I'm narrative and focus.
Yeah.
A story will help us experience through our body what will allow us to be able to then create, didactic reasoning and points and all of that stuff. But it has to come through the lens of story to keep their attention, because they process body first, mind second.
Wow. Yes. You have to show me that book. What I'll say on that is that I'm going to say two things. One of the things I worry about with this generation, and you kind of alluded to, is their lack of, what's the word? They don't have an awe of the word of God. They're not riveted on that. And the reason and that concerns me. And I imagine, in some way, shape, or form, that retired pastor walked out, probably somewhere in there thinks that. And so I think that. I worry about that. But what you just described is, how are you going to get them there?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're gonna put screenshots of commentaries on the screen and read them. And I see some people there, and there are people who will criticize my preaching now who didn't before. And it's because I won't go into the theology of, what was Antioch like and what were they eating and how far away was the river. I go, look, these kids don't care. They don't care where the river is. They care. Okay, I've got a mental health problem. I'm going to see a therapist, but I'm still not at peace. Do you have an answer? And I'm going to give you about 10 minutes to give me an answer.
Totally. And your answer can't be the Bible says. It's got to be here. We know this in nature and science. And I wonder who said that. Come on a journey with me. 2,000 years ago, this ancient author actually had a read on the culture before we ever got there. Let me share with you. Oh, by the way, that man's name was Paul. You know?
Yeah.
And Paul didn't know that this is actually legit.
Oh,
so I think they come at scripture and any religious text with the skeptical worldview, especially the Bible.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's not to us, it's inspired and it is authored by God through men. They're like, that's not even a thing. It's a book with pages that people wrote a long time ago, and it might or might not be useful for today. Our job is to show them it's more than useful.
100%. 100%. And one of the things I try to do a lot in my speech, I had an English class before I became a Christian. The professor happened to be a visiting professor from the University of Michigan, where I was at school. And he did, his first thing was on, he talked about Ulysses, the Iliad, and Homer, and all that. And it was amazing. I sat there and said, I have never heard anybody talk about this in my life. It was called Major Authors. And the next book was the Bible. And I'd never read the New Testament. I was 19. And he began to talk about Jesus and to say how Jesus was like Odysseus. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And he didn't believe the Bible, but by the way he made it sound, I was like, man, and at the same time, I was starting to go to church. But it was good for me, right? So to me, what I try to do is that, and the way I've done a lot of it is I've used the statistics and the information about mental health challenges. I've used the information about social media and its impact on them. And the way the Bible explains what they're going through. And so I'm able to weave in the scriptures, but it's in a real world way. And I often will address the fact that, hey, you may think that this doesn't apply. Well, this does apply. Let me show you. They also like to hear stories, as you said. I have old stories because I'm older, but they rip up laughing at one, the fact that I was on a rotary phone when I was little, and a touch tone phone was an advancement. They get riveted on those stories. And then they get riveted on the fact that when I was trying to dial the phone to the girl that I liked in high school, I'd do the 6 digits and I couldn't bring myself to do the 7th one. And it took so long for it to go. I just hung it up and they're ripping. And then I talk about insecurity. Yeah. And then I talk about the Bible and I say, you know what? Totally. Insecurity like that is the same whether you're in the 80s or you're in the 2000s or the 2020s. And so what you're talking about when you talk about the narrative experience, which I'm not sure I'd be able to do that as well as you would, it is exactly where they live. And here's what I've also learned. It's where a lot of people that are older live, but it also kept them from an intimate experience with God. They began to learn God academically almost. And I'll even say legalistically, here's the rules, not relationally. And we have to explore. And I've bombed a few times because I've tried to this is beyond your age. Bob Dylan, who I never liked as an artist ever, I discovered Bob Dylan closer to my 50s, late 40s. And what I began to do is read everything about him. That guy experimented with music more than almost any artist ever. And many times his fans would turn on him, and like when he grabbed the electric guitar and started using it, his fans were like, what are you doing? And I learned from Bob Dylan that you need to keep changing and take the risk. And so what you're really talking about from your perspective is if you can't go into a service and take a risk that maybe we will do something wrong. But the idea is to communicate, not to get everything right. And the idea is to put that 21-year-old kid in a seat and say, I had no idea that God had anything to do with the rap lyrics of Juice WRLD.
Yes.
And then that kid, because and Juice WRLD is so emotional. He helps me with my emotions. Well, I didn't know, and I've quoted everybody, Kendrick Lamar, and I've had people say, why are you glorifying that guy? I'm not glorifying the guy. I'm explaining that he's touched on something that's touching other people and that touches me. And we need to show them that the Bible can also touch them in the same way. You just have to know where to look and how to see it. And so, I mean, it's awesome to hear your thoughts, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you too, Russ. I wish we had more time to talk. Where, if people want to follow you and get more information about what you guys are doing at the Bay Area Christian Church, like, where would we find you, man?
So the first place you can go is to, www.bacc.cc. So that's www.bacc.cc. But if you're somebody who or know somebody who's not really into church and that kind of thing, you can go to www.deepspirituality.com. And we have a host of content, video content, podcast, that are for people that are searching, looking, considering, and thinking about it. And then I have a site, russyule.com, where you can find out not just about church stuff. You can find out about the technology things I do, the special needs stuff we do, that kind of thing. And you'll be able to, especially if you have special needs kids and you want to launch one of these kind of programs, you can find links there to that. So thanks for asking.
Yeah, thank you for the time today. It was definitely, I enjoyed it. So
I love it. I enjoyed this just sitting in a room together.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, anytime I can get to San Francisco, I'd be happy. So, thank you for being on today, and can't wait for the next episode on Church Planters Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Hey there, bivocational pastors. Are you tired of spinning your wheels trying to juggle your church duties and provide for your family? Well, hold on tight, because I've got some game-changing news for you. It's time to unveil missionbybusiness.com, the holy grail of training programs crafted exclusively for bivocational pastors like you. We get it. Your time is sacred, and you deserve a money-making solution that won't suck up every minute of your day. In just 9 short weeks, you'll become a powerhouse, armed with the secrets to launch your own business using the mind-blowing force of artificial intelligence. Yep, AI is going to be your secret weapon. Now it's time to stop dreaming and start acting. Head over to missionbybusiness.com and feast your eyes on our masterclass video, which covers everything in much more detail. It's time to build a business that fuels your dreams, supports your church, and provides for your family. Don't wait another moment. Seize this opportunity with both hands. Head on over to missionbybusiness.com now.